and support begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Nurture and Support. This is episode 73, and I am Mel at Karmic9 on Twitter. And with me, as always, hating on Amazon, is Kelly Toole.
I'm just fighting the power, man. I'm fighting the power. Hi, everybody. It's Kelly Toole at K-E-L-L-Y-T-H-U-L on Twitter. 1973, Alice Cooper's Billion Dollar Babies was released, FYI. So there you go.
All right.
Nice. Here's our fun fact for 73.
I have no fun facts today. I have no fun. Yeah, I don't have much else to throw in there. I guess I'll just do my recommendation since it's my week to go first. So I gave you a television show last week, and I'm going to give you another one this week. So this is a show that I missed when it originally aired. It is in season 2 right now. It's almost over, but season 1 is up on Netflix, and it's called The Blacklist. Have you watched this at all, Kelly?
I have not. I've seen Twitter traffic on it with great enthusiasm. I've seen it as a suggested title for me by Netflix, but I have not seen it.
Okay. I binge watched season 1, and this is a big deal for me. I loved it so much that I actually went and paid money on Amazon Instant Video to get season 2. Season 2 has a couple more episodes left before it's actually over right now. So I'm working my way through season 2. I'm almost caught up to current. So that's a lot of TV for me. I don't watch a lot of TV anymore. So this has been a lot of binge watching for me. If you don't know what The Blacklist is about, this is the show that you hear everybody talking about with James Spader. And he is phenomenal in this show. I think this is what James Spader was meant to do. He plays a criminal mastermind, snarky genius person. Basically, he's been on the FBI's top 10 most wanted for like 20 years. He's like the longest. He holds the record for having been on the list the longest. That means he hasn't been caught for all of these years. He was on the fast track to be an admiral in the U.S. Navy when he suddenly decided to become a criminal. And as the story goes that they tell you, abandoned his family one Christmas Eve and never looked back. So now he is a countryless criminal who they call the concierge of crime. And basically what he does is he helps criminals all over the world commit crimes. He's very smart. He knows everything. He traffics in intelligence networks, thefts, just anything you could imagine. And one day, he walks into the FBI's headquarters and surrenders himself in a very slick move. That's episode 1, and it's amazing. You have to wonder what his purpose is here. That's the whole thing. You know he has a plan, and that's what The Blacklist is about. He turns himself into the FBI, says, "Hey, I have a blacklist of criminals that you people don't even know exist, and they are some of the worst people on this planet. And in exchange for immunity, I'm going to help you catch them." There's just one twist. He will only deal with a newbie rookie profiler that's just been assigned to this covert FBI black ops type group named Elizabeth Keene. And she's a rookie, like I said. She's hasn't been out of Quantico FBI school very long. And he will only talk to her. He will only deal with the FBI through her. So basically, they have this covert ops black site type thing going on. And he gets immunity. And basically, he gets implanted with a GPS tracking chip so that they can find him wherever he is, and he gets cut loose. So he's not even locked up anywhere. He can roam the world, continuing his criminal enterprises. And when he's got a bad guy he wants to catch, he calls Lizzie up and tells her to come meet him and proceeds to tell her about some bad guy. So you've got the whole mystery going on of what's going on here. Why will he only deal with her? What deep dark secret is there going on? The whole time they keep you guessing about what is the nature of the relationship between the two of them. She claims to not know him from anyone. She's never met him before. She doesn't know who he is, but you definitely get the feeling that he knows a lot about her. He knows a lot about her life. He even very shortly starts making comments about how she can't trust her husband. She and her husband have been married for a few years and they are in the process of trying to adopt a baby. She was adopted herself and wants to adopt instead of having natural children. So this is a big storyline in season one. And basically, it doesn't take very long until you start to figure out the people on the blacklist that Red, that's James Spader's character, brings to them. Basically, getting them put away and catching them benefits him in some fashion. And it's just a matter of degrees as to how much are they helping him further his criminal agenda as opposed to helping to get dangerous criminals off the streets. So it's very mysterious. I absolutely loved season one. Season two, like I said, I'm not caught up current with it. It had a few a little bit. I didn't love it quite as much as season one so far, but I think I see where the story arc is going, and it's going to be where the payout is. But it has, you want to talk about, Kelly was telling me earlier about a panel he was on at C2E2 with supporting cast members. And you want to talk about supporting cast in this show. We've had Lance Reddick has played a recurring character on this show. Paul Reubens has been in here. Mary Louise Parker has been in here. And Lance Henriksen. And if you were anywhere within a 10-mile radius, you heard me squee when I saw Lance Henriksen on my screen because I love Lance Henriksen. So it's just a very cool show, and I get some Breaking Bad vibes off of this show. I'm not going to go so far as to say that I love it and it's as awesome as Breaking Bad because the story hasn't panned out. Part of the love I have for Breaking Bad is the whole arc of the story from the first episode to the final episode. And this one, we're in season two. So I can't tell you I see the whole progression of the story, but it's got some really good writing and you get little clues dropped along the way because basically it's a mystery and it's kind of a puzzle where you try to piece together little clues that get dropped to see if you can figure out what is going on before they actually tell you. So it's really good. I really like it. It's one of my favorite shows. I would have to say it's one of my top shows that I've watched recently. So I'm really enjoying it. And James Spader is just awesome in this show. He is absolutely awesome. If you have not been a James Spader fan in the past, I think you will really like him as Red Reddington. He's just great. He is a character who is very suave and sophisticated, but he can also be very down to earth with gun-toting bandits in Africa. He gets along with everybody and he's very funny as he's doing all of these things. And then occasionally you actually get to see him kicking ass. And that might be a hard thing for you to imagine if you haven't seen this show to see him running around shooting people in the head. It's really a sight to behold. You have to watch it. So I recommend everybody, at least if you've got a Netflix account, get on Netflix and watch season one of The Blacklist, or at least watch episode one. I loved it from the very first episode, which doesn't happen with a whole lot of shows for me. I really enjoyed it, and I think all of you will enjoy it too if you're like me and you're behind and you didn't start watching this with everybody else. It comes on NBC on Thursdays at 8 Central. And like I said, it's got a couple episodes left before season two is over. And then I'm not sure how long. Hopefully, it won't be very long before season two gets put up on Netflix. But I believe that Netflix paid like some record amount per episode to get the blacklist. So it's a really great show. I think y'all will enjoy it. And I really do. It's one of my favorite network TV shows that I've watched in a very, very long time.
Cool. Yeah. And boy, it seems like when I've seen it on Twitter, the people who are into this are very into it, very excited. And so there seems to be a lot of passion for it, similar to Breaking Bad and right. everything. So I'll have to give that a shot.
Yeah, that's kind of what turned me on to it. Season 2, I saw a lot of people just going crazy about it. And when I got to season 2, I see why. You have some real character progression going on. You've got, you know, especially your little rookie profiler. You know, she's a very, I hesitate to say naive in episode 1 of season 1, but she has a lot of growing to do from, you know, that point to where I am in season 2. And that's really kind of what the show, I think, is about, is to watch how her interactions with Reddington change her and what she is turning into and becoming from her association with him. And so it's a good character study. That's part of what reminds me of Breaking Bad with it, because you're seeing not a purposeful alteration of her personality, but you are seeing how she is changing from the things that she's been exposed to and the things that she's having to do. And then you also have the question of sometimes, is she actually learning too well from her association with him, and if she isn't trying to play some manipulation out on him the way that he manipulates everyone around him. So it's a really interesting show. I really enjoy it.
Very cool. Yeah. So thanks for another binge watch for me. I'll lose some time there, but sounds like it'll be pretty awesome. But
well, the good thing is without commercials, those network shows are really not very long.
That's true.
You know, it's supposed to be an hour long, but I don't know if those things even make it to 35, maybe max 40 minutes when they cut commercials out. So you can really breeze through it pretty quickly, which is the only way that I got through it very fast, because I'm a notoriously slow binge watcher.
Excellent. Cool. Well, so my many parallels here. So your recommendation was on Netflix. My recommendation's on Netflix. Your last recommendation had a strong relationship to this one or similar. So does mine. Your recommendation had a amazing supporting cast, as does mine. So,
right.
So what I'm going to recommend is the name of it's on Netflix. It's about an hour and a half long. It's a documentary on Shep Gordon. It's called Supermensch, The Legend of Shep Gordon. And, I was familiar with Shep before watching it, because Shep is Alice Cooper's longtime manager forever. So I knew the name and I'd seen that a lot, but oh my goodness. He has done far, far more than Alice. Just to give you an idea of who's actually in this documentary, let me read you some names here. Tom Arnold, Mario Batali, Dana Carvey, Julia Child, Alice Cooper, Michael Douglas, Sally Field, Mick Fleetwood, James Garner, Emeril Lagasse, Anne Murray, Mike Myers, Willie Nelson, Teddy Pendergrass, Sylvester Stallone, Sharon Stone, Steven Tyler, John Voight.
Wow.
So,
Anne Murray.
Yeah. So we're gonna talk about Anne in a second, because I don't want to spoil this, because I think you just want to watch it and see how the whole thing plays out. But I'll set it up a little bit for you. This is also a very strong parallel to my last recommendation. So Iron Sheik was my last recommendation, about a flawed but ultimately likable and fascinating character, and that is Shep as well. Shep's flaw is, he came into prominence in the early 70s in an environment where there were a lot of young ladies who were willing to give a lot of attention, and he fully availed himself of that. He reveled in that. He liked the ladies a lot. Not disrespectful, but he lapped up that lifestyle. Hedonism, I believe, is some a nice way to say it. And so he was a lot about that. There was definitely a piece of that. But he is also, Mike Myers directed this, and he had been actually on Shep for a long time to do it. And he didn't, Shep didn't really want to do the story. It took about 20 years to get Mike Myers to convince him to actually do it. But what you also find out is he's very likely one of the nicest people in the world, and just incredibly. So Mensch, which I wasn't particularly familiar with, is just basically a person who is remarkably trustworthy and loyal. And that is what Shep is. They start the story that he starts to explain that he had come out of college and he was going to work in a correctional institution and help rehabilitate prisoners. And he was, you know, it's the early 70s, really long hair, kind of a hippie guy. And he comes into this institution and the guards are like, oh, glad to have you aboard. Tell you what, go out and play some softball with the inmates. And they locked him in the field with the inmates who have baseball bats. And they basically beat the crap out of him. And so he came back in and they're like, so do you get the idea that we don't really want you here, Mr. Longhair? And Shep was like, got it. And so he left there and went to L.A. Just went into the, what's called the Landmark Hotel, and or the Hollywood Hotel. It's just kind of a divey little hotel. And he was there in a room and heard a woman being what he thought attacked. So he ran down, thought she was being raped. So he went down to save her and she clocked him because she was being
having
amorous, having a good time with her friend. Now, the interesting thing is the lady was Janis Joplin.
Oh, cool.
The guy was Jimi Hendrix.
Oh.
So they just start hanging out at this hotel and they're like, hey, you ought to manage somebody. He's like, okay, sounds good. Who should I manage? You should manage Alice Cooper. And so they ended up kind of connecting him there. Also, somewhere in the process, he managed Pink Floyd for 4 hours.
Okay.
So it was kind of a wild and woolly time there. But so it starts off there and it is kind of cool, as you know, well documented. I'm a giant Alice Cooper fan. And so you get a little dimension on some of the Alice Cooper lore. You learn things like, and I believe I shared before, you know, Alice has never bitten the head off of a chicken. A chicken was on stage. Alice thought chickens could fly. Alice threw the chicken up. It fell on the audience. They tore it apart.
Unfortunate.
Shep brought the chicken to the show. I never knew that until I watched this. I also had mentioned that England had a problem with Alice. We learn why in this, and it was Shep's idea in terms of what to do, to say, we got to do something to get attention here. We're not selling enough tickets. And so you'll get to kind of see how all that, so you get all that story and the relationship between those two kind of throughout the whole story. Folks say these guys are fiercely loyal to each other. And by the end of the movie, Shep has, or the documentary, he's quit really managing folks. Except Alice. He goes, I can never stop managing Alice. He's like another arm. You know, he's always there. But you get some kind of neat, but it's not an Alice Cooper story. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of Shep, what he did with Alice, but he was the one that came up with chefs as celebrities. This idea of where the chefs were, they would come and do things, but they weren't getting paid anything at all. And so he started to get involved and said, oh, we got to fix this. And so Julia Child and then Maria Batali and Emeril. Emeril was kind of one of his big ones. He said he did a lot of things with them. He had actually learned how to cook because he just has this huge array of friends. Some famous gourmet chef that he became friends with, he says, you need to teach me how to cook. And so he taught him how to cook. So he's become a very much a gourmet chef, and that's how he got into that.
Cool.
He's Jewish, but then he became partially Buddhist. And he is, you know, cooked for the Dalai Lama and these types of things. So it's a rich and fascinating story of it. Just a real interesting character. Mike Myers, who wanted to do this, part of the reason was he somewhere in his career had hit a really rough patch. And Shep had, after a while, had said, you know what, I need to get out of L.A. and had moved to Hawaii and had just a beautiful beachside house there. He says it's an open door policy. Anybody can stop by anytime and stay. And Mike Myers said, you know, I need a little time. Can I come hang out for a few days? And ended up staying for like 3 months or something like that. And just, you know, he did some things. Tom Arnold would come visit, would be on the beach, a little beefier, a paparazzi guy, shot a picture of him 1 year, and Beached Whale was on all the covers. Did it again the next year, and Tom was kind of complaining about it. And Chef said, let me go see what I can do. And what was really kind of cool about it is, guys, he never, he just always worked it out. What can we do here? What can we figure out? So we went and talked to the paparazzi guy. He said, so if I can get you a couple pictures here, will you back off of this stuff? It just kind of does a lot of interesting things. So just a fascinating guy. Like I said, a little testosterone driven in his early days. and we learn a bit about that, but just did just some fascinating things. Just a huge, rich and rewarding life professionally. And it gets into a little bit too that he loves babies and kept thinking about a family, and just things hadn't kind of ever quite panned out for him regarding that. So it's kind of interesting, but it's just an amazing life story. And the guy's got one of the most infectious laughs in the world that you'll hear pretty regularly throughout the entire documentary. And so, I saw it with Shep Gordon. I knew there was the Alice Cooper connection, and I got all my Alice stuff in there that I wanted to, that was fun, but there's a ton more. And so, it's a really, really interesting thing to see. So, hour and a half long, actually 85 minutes. So I recommend Supermensch, The Legend of Shep Gordon on Netflix as my recommendation for this week.
Cool. That sounds interesting. I had no idea. I guess I sort of recognized his name because I'm sure you've mentioned it before. But yeah, I didn't know who he was. So
yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, it's just, and it's, you know, one of the neatest things is, so he kind of did write by the chefs. And then before that, Luther Vandross was another artist he managed. and found out there was something that used to be called the Chitlin Circus, which was a circuit, which was basically club owners connected to record companies, connected to radio stations, that basically created an environment to say, look, we don't have to pay you, but if you make us mad, we'll shut you down. Mm. And so he got involved with that and kind of changed all that.
Cool.
And then just to kind of prove he could do something different, he managed Anne Murray
and Willie Nelson?
And, well, he didn't do, I don't know if he did Willie. He knew Willie. I think they were friends, but Anne Murray was actually someone he managed. And he goes, she's like the complete polar opposite of Alice Cooper. I mean, if I was going to look at the negative image, Anne Murray is the negative. And so he was trying to get, you know, so she's a squeaky, clean Canadian singer with a beautiful voice. Mm-hmm. And so he goes and visits his buddies, Alice, John Lennon at that point in time, who's hanging out with Alice in LA, Harry Nilsson, said, you guys need to come down and get a picture with the singer that I'm working with. And there's this picture of Anne Murray with Alice and John Lennon. So,
that's cool.
Yep's the guy that made all that happen. So just a really cool story. So it's kind of fun. It's really, really interesting to hear. Lots of interesting backstories. Ultimately, a very likable man, and just kind of a very interesting story.
Yeah, that sounds really neat. I like musician stuff, but yeah, he sounds like he did a lot trying to right some wrongs that were going on in the world. I like people that try to do that. Way to go, Shep.
Yep, good guy. Excellent. Well, and I believe for this week, we're going to just have one social media recommendation.
Yeah, I'm skipping out this week. Sorry, okay. Guys, I know you're heartbroken.
It happens from time to time. Well, I do want to make one because Mel mentioned a little bit earlier, I had a chance to sit in some panels because I had gone to C2E2 up in Chicago here recently. And of course, there's Artist Alley at C2E2 where there's just tons of artists with all kinds of very cool stuff. And I happened to come across this one booth where this young lady had put together all sorts of interesting, that sometimes things had a bit of a Star Wars theme to it. Sometimes there was a Disney thing. There was a neat mashup of Stitch and How to Train Your Dragon. So it was Stitch and kind of the Black Dragon outfit. Mm-hmm. It was How to Train Your Experiment. And so some pretty clever stuff. So I ended up picking some things up for this young lady. And so from the Swinging Lace, I wanted to recommend her on Twitter, and her Twitter handle is Hey Kayana. It's HeyKayana. Ashley Hay is the artist's name, and we'll provide some other links to her stuff too. If you go to her Twitter account, you can get to her site. Some really cool things. She's got a Death Star Fishbowl t-shirt that I think's going to be making its way to me. And then
that is cool. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, she's very talented, and so it's really cool. And we'll I'll try and get a picture of this and send it to Mel. Her business cards are certainly caught my eye, because her business cards, I'm kind of showing it to Mel here, has a stormtrooper helmet, and then underneath it says, "This is the designer you are looking for." And so
I like her.
Just very, very cool. So she also does some cosplay stuff. She actually does cosplay, so there's some photos of that, but then the graphic artist and all this stuff. She's a graphic designer. She does websites and she does t-shirts. So really, really cool. So I highly recommend you follow her on Twitter, and you'll get to her site through the Twitter account, and thought she was pretty cool. So there you go.
Yeah, and you never know who you're going to get a high five from when you're wearing a Star Wars t-shirt in the grocery store. I was wearing my Vader shirt over the weekend, and some complete stranger came up and said, "Did your shirt say Vader?" I'm like, "Yeah." And they're like, "Give me some skin." I'm like, okay. I don't really like to touch strangers, but thank you.
At least it was not a hug. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, I need a hug.
Yeah, I've been calling security. Help! Yeah, but Star Wars bring in generations together all over the planet.
There you go.
So, I think that concludes this episode, episode 73 of Nurture and Support. Matt will be along shortly to tell all of you how to get in touch with us. We would love to hear from you, and we will be back next week.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
You can contact us on our website, nurtureandsupport.net, or email us at nurtandsup@gmail.com. That's nurtandsupp@gmail.com. Or tweet us at NurtAndSup on Twitter.
Nurturing and supporting. Turning.